This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my 88.
Welcome to episode 168 of our show, Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. I want to start the show out tonight with a song that I recorded back in 1997 on my album that was called The Anchor Holes. This song is called You Can Forget About It Now.
Can't forget about it now. You can't forget about it now. All the sins in your past were done away at Calvary. You can't forget about it now. You can't forget about it now. When the Lord, He forgave you, He threw away the man. Con man, you may have been a thief, and you may have been a wine old lion in the street, but it's over and done, and from now on you can't forget about it now. Oh yes you can, you can't forget about it now. All the sins in your past were done away at Calvary. You can't forget about it now. Hypocrite singing in the choir. You may have been a derelict sinking in the mire. And you may have been an infidel headed for the fire. But it's over and done and from now on you can't forget about it now. Oh yes you can, you can't forget about it now. Every one of those sins in your past were done away in Calvary. You can't forget about it now. Forget about it now. 'Cause when the Lord, He forgave you, He threw away the memory. When the Lord, He forgave you, He threw away the memory. Yes, the Lord, He forgave you, and He threw away the memory.
That song was called You Can Forget About It Now, and it was based on the scripture in Hebrews where the Lord says He will remember your sins no more. So good evening, Brian Hoogenboom.
Good evening, Lawrence.
I still like that name, Brian Hoogenboom. Anyway, Brian, I texted you earlier today and asked you if you would find two songs for me that I want to play excerpts back to back. And then I want to ask you a question.
Okay, I got them ready.
Let's go.
Man gave names to all the animals. In the beginning. In the beginning. Man gave names to all the animals. In the beginning. Long time ago. He saw an animal that liked to growl. Big furry paws and he liked to howl.
There is a house in New Orleans. They call the rising sun. And it's been the ruin of many a poor boy. And God, I know I'm one.
So, Brian, why did you think I picked those two songs?
I have no idea. The only thing I know for sure that they have in common is animals.
The animals. You're right. That's the reason. First song was Bob Dylan. Man gave names to the animals. And the second one was By the Animals. This is our animal show tonight, Brian. I'm titling it God Loves the Animals, because we're going to interview a wonderful Christian lady that you and I know who feels that God has laid it on her heart to advocate for the kind treatment for the animals in our area, and it's Jane Boswell. Now, you know her husband also.
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
And tell me how you know him.
Her husband's name is Kurt Boswell, and he was the principal of my high school.
Yes.
While I was there.
And you actually ended up playing in a music group at church with him at one time, right?
Just a couple of years ago, maybe a year or so ago, our drummer friend Keith Hamrick also was participating with the worship team over at a local church, and they needed a guitar player, an acoustic guitar player, and so he asked me to go over there and sit in with him. I said, sure, you know, I'll do that. I get there, and lo and behold, who's playing bass? But it's my principal from high school.
I cannot imagine playing music with my principal.
It was great. Well, I mean, yeah. I didn't spend a lot of time in his office when I was in high school. I guess I was kind of over all that by then. But
It was great.
Yeah, we had a good time.
And I met Jane because she played on the tennis team with my wife. But anyway, we're going to have Jane on here. And we're going to talk about part of her life that she feels God laid out for her as a passion, a mission in a sense to fulfill. Jane was a librarian, which they call now, media arts specialist or whatever, for many years. But we're going to talk to her about how God led her to begin to advocate for better treatment of the animals. And she actually finds abused animals and rescues them. So just in case people think that I've become a tree hugger, I want to just read a few Bible verses, if that's all right.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. Now, we're not saying that everybody's got to own a pet. I've owned 17 dogs in my marriage life and one cat. And Brian, you had a wonderful, wonderful dog. Basset Hound.
Mm-hmm.
But God is concerned for his creation. Here's a few verses. Proverbs 12:10. A righteous man cares for the needs of his animal, but the kindness acts of the wicked are cruel. And then the song that Bob Dylan sang, Genesis 2:20. So man gave names to all the livestock, the birds of the air, and all the beasts of the field. Says in Genesis 1:26, God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. Psalm 36:6, O Lord, you preserve both man and beast. And there's this interesting verse in Jonah when God spared the city of Nineveh, and Jonah was upset because they repented. That's a weird thing. He was upset that they thought he was a great preacher, and they responded. And God said to him, though, and should I not have concern for the great city of Nineveh, in which there are more than 120,000 people who cannot tell their right hand from their left, and also many animals? And so there's this theme that God does care for his creation and for his animals. Jesus said, look at the birds of the air. Not one of them falls without the Father knowing it. There's other verses where they said to be kind to animals. The Old Testament said, don't muzzle the ox when the ox is treading the grain. Let the ox eat. One of the purposes of the Sabbath was to let the animals rest. And even though they had strict rules, they always let the people give the animals water. I could go on and on. The one lady said, when Jesus at first wasn't going to heal her daughter, she said, hey, listen, even the dogs get to eat the crumbs that fall off the table. And Jesus, that moved his heart. He said, you're right. So anyway, there's a biblical base when we talk about someone feeling a real calling to be kind and help animals that are neglected and abused. So what do you think of that?
Obviously, God has called us to be the stewards of everything that he's given to us, and the animals are obviously one of those things that are included.
So before we play my conversation I had with Jane Boswell, I want to play a song that I wrote, 20 years ago, and it's just my version of the 23rd Psalm. Now, it hit me one time reading the 23rd Psalm that this is really the story of an animal who is bragging on their owner. If you really go through the 23rd Psalm, the sheep, it's like the sheep is saying, let me tell you about my shepherd. And you might have your shepherd, but I want to tell you everything my shepherd does for me and what my shepherd means to me. So I thought that was kind of an interesting slant on things that David did when he wrote this. So this is called The Sheep and the Shepherd. It's really a takeoff of the 23rd Psalm.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures, and he leads me beside still waters, restoring my soul. In the cool of the day, why should I lie awake, losing sleep? He's the great shepherd, and I am his sheep. I am at peace, for I know that my life is in his hands. The sheep and the shepherd, my faithful friend. He leads me in paths of righteousness for the sake of the glory of his name. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. So why should I lie awake, losing sleep? You're the great shepherd, and I am your sheep. I am at peace, for I know that my life is in your hand. My faithful friend. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare me a table in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with the oil, joy, my cup overflows again and again. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, all the days of my life. I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I shall gaze on the glory of his presence forevermore. So why should
shepherd, and I am his sheep. I am at peace, for I know that my life is in his hands. The sheep and the shepherd, my faithful friend. I'm the sheep and he's the shepherd, my faithful friend.
Let's go now to an interview I have with Jane Boswell, who was the president of the Florence Humane Society. This was done on January 25th, 2024. Good afternoon, Jane.
Good afternoon, and thanks for inviting me in.
There is a huge building here in town with her name plastered over it. You're one of the first people I've ever met that has a building named after you while you're still alive. But this building is the Jane Boswell Animal Shelter. And when did you get your name up on the wall there?
Well, it was actually a big surprise. We had needed a shelter in Florence for a long time. When I became involved as a volunteer, and I'm still a volunteer, we were in a little concrete block building that was literally falling apart. And a group of us just got together and decided that we would raise the money for a new facility. It took us 6 years and six bona fide events to raise enough money to construct the shelter. And of course, we didn't build it as big as we needed, but for us, it was a godsend to be able to have a safe, humane environment for the homeless animals of Florence. But that was a surprise. It was revealed at one of the bona fide events that the building would be named after me. And honestly, that's definitely a gift that brought tears to my eyes and something I felt was so undeserving. But, you know, some days it does burden you a little bit. I feel like I need to go out and wash windows or spruce it up or, you know.
With their name on there.
Yeah. So it does kind of add a little bit of a little bit of burden on your shoulders. But it was a wonderful gesture. And
yeah. Well, you're the first one I've met that's still alive and has a building. And now, anybody listening here, they're thinking she meant benefit, didn't she? You keep saying bona fide. Tell them what a bona fide is.
Well, when we gathered together to figure out how to raise the kind of money that was needed to construct a facility, none of us had a clue. But we decided that we would have a fun event that hopefully would draw a crowd, and it could be animal lovers and maybe people that just loved a good party. And one of our folks that were sat in the room that evening decided the name The Bona Fide. And so it stuck, and it's been very profitable. And all of the money that is made from this event each year goes to the care of the animals housed at the shelter, and honestly, even some that aren't housed there. When people come to us with needs, we try our best to help out animals in bad situations.
So let's talk about you. Were you from Florence? Did you grow up here in town?
I grew up in Darlington, which is only 10 miles away.
When's the first time you realized that you loved animals?
And my grandmother had a farm, so we always went out there, and my uncles hunted, so there was always dogs around, and we loved playing with the puppies. I didn't really care about chickens that much, but my grandmother
didn't have a lot. Oh, I'm so glad. I am so glad to hear that. People laugh at me because I hate live chickens. When I was a kid, I had a cousin from Charleston who didn't know you weren't supposed to go to a hen with little bitties or chicks and pick them up. And so my cousin did that, and the hen just picked them all in the head, you know.
And I didn't see it, but I heard about it. And I have never wanted to be around. I mean, I'll go get the eggs, but I would never hold a chicken, a live chicken.
When we grew up, at Easter, you know, they had the chicks that you could get. And, of course, they have, there are now laws that prohibit dying chicks. But in those days, you know, we didn't know any better. And we would always get a chicken for Easter. And, of course, as it grew older, it would go to my grandmother's farm. And one of the, well, to me, it was kind of funny, but it wasn't so funny for my brother. But he felt sure that that chicken remembered him. And so when we went to my grandmother's that Sunday afternoon, he proceeded to reintroduce himself to that chicken, which was really now a rooster.
That rooster
chased him all over my grandmother's yard. So I kind of learned it was better to have a little bit of a healthy distance.
Yeah.
Roosters especially.
There's horror rooster stories. I know. So many people. Okay, so you went to your grandma, you liked the puppies, you didn't like the chickens all that much. I shouldn't put this on here. I might not, but now I grew up, we didn't have a freezer till I was probably in the fifth grade or maybe younger than that. But my mother would chop the heads off of whatever chicken we ate for fried chicken, you know. Some people would wring their necks, but she had a hatchet and she would go out there and chop the head off. And again, my cousins from Charleston, who weren't used to that. My cousin saw her do that. She was horrified that her sweet Aunt Myrtle would do something like that. And, of course, we had chicken for supper that night with her folks. And in the middle of the meal, she made a huge scene and pushed her chair back dramatically and said, "You murderer," and she ran out of the house. But we shouldn't talk about that with the leader of the Humane Societies.
That's too funny.
So,
I love it. That's too funny.
I'm sure you probably saw your grandma do a little of that yourself. But we've outgrown that. We're humane to animals now. You told me on the phone, feel a calling, like a passion, like not just a human passion, but you feel like it's part of God's plan for your life to do what you do.
I always say when we go to heaven and we pull back the curtain of heaven, we will see just how God planned out everything in our lives, even though while we're going through it, we don't see that. And probably it's a good thing. But I grew up and went to college. My goal was to go into education because I loved reading. I love the idea of sharing it with young people. And so I became what was called a librarian, but now is a media specialist. And I loved all my years in the school system. But one of the things that happened was when my husband was assistant principal at South Florence, and I had been there like 16 years. And when we got married, our superintendent decided that it would be more appropriate for me to work at another school. And so there was an opening at Wilson. You know, I cried. I did not want to leave South Florence. But it is amazing to me how God used that move to Wilson High School in my life. And one of the ways was through animals, because I didn't currently have any pets. I had not had pets in a long time. But one of the teachers at Wilson found a tiny kitten at a dumpster. The mother and the other kittens were dead, and so they brought this kitten. And I took it home, not knowing anything about cats or kittens. When growing up, we had just had dogs. But it just seemed like that kitten took root in my heart. And I was invited to go to a Humane Society meeting not long after that and became a volunteer from that point forward. And it's as though God intended for that to happen. And it's just amazing that you know, God is behind all of creation.
Yeah.
And one of the roles that he has given us as Christians and even as citizens is the idea that we take care of the creatures in our community, the homeless, the elderly. There are just so many roles that God has called us to be a part of. And you know, I love being able to help take care of his creation.
people report to your agency, right, if they see an animal mistreated. Is that, that's part of what you do? Is that right?
It is. You know, unfortunately, we don't have a legal ability to address a lot of the complaints, although I do try to go to as many locations if I get calls about it, because I want to be able to see for myself that something either does exist, or sometimes, you know, it's a, it could be a neighborly spat or a family spat, and it's not an actual neglect case. But we are an arm of our community that does provide assistance. If there is any way that if someone calls about abandoned animals and, or animals that are literally on the edge of dying, you know, if there's a way that we can remove the animal from that situation, we do it. We get a lot of calls about large animals in need. Unfortunately, in the Florence area, people don't think about cows and horses, but there are a lot of those that are kept in probably situations that are just much less than what they need to survive. Often when I get a call, a horse is down, and it is not always possible to save them at that point. A lot of people don't understand that, especially when a large animal has lost a significant part of its body mass due to starvation, there's a point at which the organs begin to shut down and there's nothing you can do. But, you know, we do urge the community to make these calls, because if it's a place at which I don't have the authority to walk on the property, then I'm going to contact law enforcement or animal control, and sometimes both, so that we can do what we can to get the animal out of that situation. Unfortunately, in South Carolina, the laws are not very strong, and it is sometimes very difficult to rescue an animal.
So you've seen starving horses and starving cows?
Oh, absolutely.
Is that usually because the people don't have the money to feed them, or is it just abuse?
I think it is, I would say, more intentional neglect than ignorance. A lot of times, right now we are in a crisis situation in our community in South Carolina. Really, the whole country is facing a huge overpopulation of animals, mainly because, especially here in the South, we have really hesitated to have any kind of spay-neuter legislation in place. And so the reproduction of animals has been pretty much unfettered. And so you've just seen where there are more cats and dogs that we can find a home for, and there are also more large animals. I probably get calls weekly about large animals. And right now, a lot of people don't know that we operate a horse rescue. It's a nonprofit side of our Florence Area Humane Society. We call it Hands Helping Horses. We have 20 acres of land that we purchased. Marilyn Godbole, a friend of the Humane Society who died several years ago, left us an unexpected amount of money, and I always feel like if God provides something unexpected, then dream big, and that's what we did. We bought 20 acres of land, but we have 20 horses on it. We could certainly use more land at this point, but almost every horse on that property came from a pretty destitute situation. Some of them were hoarding cases. Some of them were abandonment cases. A good many of them came to us literally skin and bones, and we were able to bring them back to good health. Unfortunately, many of them, because of the treatment they received in their younger years, are never going to be fully recovered horses. And so a lot of them will still be on meds or have gotten to the age that they just need to be retired for the rest of their lives.
So do people adopt horses like they do cats and dogs?
We do adopt out our horses. Mainly right now, what we have are unrideable horses. We have probably one that could be ridden, but a lot of our horses are what they are called companion animals. They would be a great pasture mate, yeah. Or for somebody that just wants to groom a horse, they would do well in a situation like that. You know, I think it is amazing to me that God has given us such magnificent animals as horses to see, and they ask for so little. You know, every day when we finish our feeding routine, they are just so content. They think I cook some of the best meals, and I'm very appreciative of that. I don't get quite those accolades at home, but they enjoy every bite. I consider it a gift to be able to care for these horses, and I love the fact to have young people come out there because, you know, in our even in Florence, there's not that many opportunities for children and young adults to interact with horses and to have them come out and lead a horse, which they've never done, or groom a horse, or get to feed them hay or their feed for that night. It's a great experience. And it's horses just to me provide a great comfort for humans. They're just these large animals that move so gracefully, and how God just created such unique, such a neat diversity of animals just truly amazes me.
How many animals are in the shelter right now?
Oh, gosh. There is probably, I guess, around 150 maybe between 150 and 200. I think, though, all of our kennels are full. We're unable to take any animals at this time. That doesn't mean, however, that there's not a great need for it. I know that every time I'm out at the shelter, people drive up with an animal that they found by the side of the road. It might be a puppy. It might be a kitten. It might be a litter of puppies or kittens. We, at our horse barn, have four dogs out there and that are housed in our horse stalls because there's no room at the animal shelter. We also have been continuing to lease our old SNP, which was a spay-neuter clinic, and we have dogs and puppies there. We have a litter of puppies that the mother showed up in their yard and had them under their house, and we've taken them over. So, you know, the need is still out there. I think as a community, we have to step forward and meet that need. There's a need for a low-cost spay-neuter clinic in Florence. We are soliciting funding for that because our idea as a nonprofit, we don't want to make any money. We want to provide a service. And right now, spay-neuter is very much in need in our community. We would love to expand our horse rescue. I think one of the things that I have seen is there is a connection a lot of times between people and children who sometimes through no fault of their own are in desperate situations, and they need a rescue, and they often bond with animals,
right,
who have been through the same kind of situation. It's just heartbreaking that sometimes the only thing that they feel loves them is this four-legged pet. And it's often that the animal realizes that as well. I used to go out on a lot of abuse calls a lot more than I do now. I shudder to think of the number of doors that I knocked on, not really knowing what was going to be on the other side. But unfortunately, in the climate we have today, you know, everybody has a gun. And so I am very leery of just knocking at random on doors. But a lot of times when I would get a call about an animal in need, it would lead to something a lot deeper.
Absolutely.
One of the first calls that I ever had with horses, and we had no trailer, no property. We were just beginning to get into horse rescue, was a call in the Pampico area. When we got there, a horse was down, and I had to make a phone call and find, I had to find people who could come help me because there were, I can't remember now, 6 to 8 horses. There were small animals on the property. But when I knocked on that door, a little fella, he might have been about 9 or 10 years old, he came to the door along with 3 other little children behind him. It was in the summer. It was a brutally hot day. They had no air conditioning. I asked him to walk outside with me. And that little fella started crying immediately because I said, "Where's the food for your animals?" And he said, "It's my job to feed them, and I haven't fed them because I don't have any food to give them." It was heartbreaking that he, at 9 years old, felt responsibility for these animals and had no way of helping them. You know, we got sheriff's deputies out there. We were able to get horse trailers. The mother was actually employed at a local hospital, and she had left the children by themselves to fend for themselves while she worked. She was charged with animal neglect, but I made sure before we left that property that day that social services was contacted. It made me see that from that early on with animal abuse, that a lot of times there's a lot of a huge connection with people and families, and you have to look past the animals and make sure that you see if the people are okay, right, as well.
Right.
You're listening to our podcast, Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. We've devoted this episode to the testimony and the ministry of our friend Jane Boswell, who is the president of the Humane Society here in Florence County, South Carolina. I wanted to bring my wife into the conversation because they're old tennis buddies, and so we continue talking not only about her work with preserving and advocating for animals and the kind treatment of animals, but also about Jane's faith in Christ.
So, Jane, I brought my wife, Trish, in here. She doesn't like to talk on the microphone, but you've known each other a long time. Did y'all play on a team together? You were on?
Mm-hmm. We used to play singles together.
Now, Trish said she used to see this happen with her job. She was, as you know, she was home health social worker, so she was out and around. A lot of times you would see a dog on a short leash.
Very short,
hot
shade.
Summertime with no water.
No shade.
I'm sure you've seen that too.
And that is a violation of state law. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is, the state law is not great, but that's the one thing it says. They have to have adequate potable water. They have to have shelter from, you know, what do they call it? The environmental, you know, things. And I think every place has a leash law. Well, not a leash law. What do you call it? Where they're not supposed to be on a chain 24/7. But that is so unenforced. I mean,
yeah.
But they are required to have a certain type of chain that swivels so it can't get tangled.
Right.
That's the call that I still get more than any. In fact, I got one right around a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I've been to your shelter twice.
Okay.
The second time was to get Finley.
Rebels slash Finley.
Finley, who you
sitting who you see, feet.
Who's sitting right beside you. And he's been a handful, but he's been a blessing, but he has been a handful.
He's a lot of fun.
The first time I went there, and I wanted to bring Trish here, we had an experience when Trish didn't divorce me, but I think
we've never had a doghouse, but you would have been in it.
Oh my goodness. I left the gate open in the backyard. There's a woods and kind of a swamp behind there.
Is that time y'all look for that?
Oh yeah, and so I was bagging our leaves and dumping them out in the woods, and I was supposed to go to a wedding with one of my coworkers at the adoption agency. And without thinking, I left that gate open. So was it nighttime? You said, "Where's TJ?" And I said, "I don't know." You know? And then we looked, and that gate was open. And oh, my, my, my. How many days were we?
It was the third day.
I remember telling Trish, if we don't find that dog, I will go to my grave with that hanging over my head till they drop me 6 feet under. He went out into the swamp, and
I remember you talking about
it. It's a big swamp. I mean, it goes for miles and miles.
Well, I think it's 385 acres of protected wetlands. Goes all the way to Alligator Road.
Alligator Road. Now, but why do they name it Alligator Road? That's another thing I thought.
On the Google map, you can see a stream back there. I couldn't tell you how far back, but I got...
You went as far as you could go with your boots and all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had my gear on and traipsed back there because our grandson was living with us, and he kept saying he was hearing a dog bark, but nobody else could hear it. We searched everywhere.
And I went to your shelter two or three times. Have you seen this dog? And we got posters all over town. And that was the other time I went to your shelter. I was really impressed, though, with what I saw. But she was very embarrassed.
Well, Deb Rhodes, who is busy with Flyball, I took my cell phone out, and she was in contact with me, and it was getting dusk at the time. And I did hear a bark, so I kept following it.
This is after 3 days, right?
After 3 days, which three I days. Seriously worried.
And it was October. It was getting cold at night.
So I went as far as I could, and all of a sudden, I got in this black tarry mixture and sunk to my knees, and I could not move. It was like quicksand. I don't know how I couldn't get out of there, but I couldn't. So I get on my cell phone, and I said, "Deb, I am stuck out in the woods, but I think TJ's out there." So I said, "If you could just come by." Well, she sent the entire West Florence Fire Department.
Because she was stuck. She couldn't
get out. Here comes the fire trucks and five or six firemen. God. And
it was like quicksand. She could not get
out. I literally was up to my knees, could not move.
I tried to go rescue her, then I got stuck, but I did get out, but she was really,
he
really
had to pull the man thing. I said, "Please don't
I said,
out.
I'm going to come rescue you."
Well, I got stuck.
And I lost my shoe in the process. I finally got out, but my shoe's underneath the
still in the mud. So it was dark by then. They had their flashlights and poles, and TJ came to me. He was out there. And I was just so relieved. And one of the
fire... How did he not get stuck?
I don't know. That's what's incredible about the whole thing. But I got him in my arms, and I was just holding on to him. And it was getting cold by then. A male fireman came out at this long pole, and they did kind of a body chain. I don't even know how they got to me, but I said, "Just take TJ." So they got the dog first and handed him off and got him to safety. And then they finally pulled me out by extending this long log pole thing, and I grabbed the end. And when I came up out of that mud, it sounded like a huge suction cup. It was the strangest thing. So finally I get back to the backyard, and here's all my neighbors lined up, and a female fire department ladies taking pictures. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to be on the..."
We thought that we were going to be on the news that
night. I was so embarrassed.
I would have thought so too.
Yeah, but I told the guy who rescued me, I said, "I am so sorry you had to come out for something like that." And he said, "Lady, if my dog was lost in the wood, I'd be out there too." So he was totally sympathetic. They were great.
And I can't remember the last time we bought a dog. We had a beagle that was just found by the side of the road, starving.
Yeah, one of our therapists found it.
And, wonderful dog, dumbest dog we ever had, but he was sweet.
Yeah, and we ended up with him because nobody would feed him. People saw him but refused to feed him. He was literally starved just about to death when we got him.
We had another dog that was in a domestic abuse home.
Horrible. And, horrible situation.
And they needed to get rid of the dog. And wonderful dog. So anyway.
Well, actually, a social worker bought the dog off of the people because she just couldn't stand seeing what was going on there. And then they turned around and got another dog.
Of course.
So you're a member of the First Presbyterian Church here in town, right?
Yep.
When did you begin to have a relationship with the Lord?
You know, I did not grow up in a Christian home. My father never went to church. My mother grew up in a farming family. And what I tell people is, I remember as a child walking the fields with my uncles, my mother, my uncles, and my grandmother. And I don't think there's a group of people who understand the words of the Lord's Prayer better than farmers.
Yeah.
Because they understand that their daily needs came from those crops.
That's
and
right.
I remember them asking God for help. They knew that if the rain came at the right time, it would be a productive season. They knew that if it didn't, you know, they might have to do without. And they knew that their families depended on God's provision. So I think that God planted those seeds then with that farming background. And I was just, you know, I was telling you about, you know, pulling back the curtain of heaven and being able to see. I was fortunate enough to have a Christian sweet mate in college. And
where'd you go to college?
I went to Winthrop.
Winthrop.
And she read her Bible every day. And she was just a real source of faith. And then when I graduated and I actually went to First Presbyterian, there was a singles Bible study that came out of that church. And that's where I found God, was through that singles Bible study. And Perry Mobley was the pastor at First Presbyterian.
Oh, I've heard the most wonderful things about him. He won my bass player to the Lord, Russell James.
I did not know that.
Russell went there to church, and he just was going through a crisis with his physical health. And he called that man.
Pastor Mobley.
And he said, well, come down to my house Friday night. And he said, where do you live? He said, I live two doors down from you.
Neighbors.
But, yeah, he had an impact. So he was the leader of that study, huh?
No, he was the pastor of the church, and there was nothing for singles that, you know, along the 20 to 30 something age group.
And so you said the prayer in the Bible study, or at your room by yourself, or
well, the prayer
as far as
Christ,
yes,
it was part of that Bible study. I got to see people who lived, you know, a Christian life. I mean, my mother loved church, but we didn't study the Bible at home. I mean, you know, she got us there when she could and that sort of thing. But I just think it was just what Jesus modeled, disciples making disciples.
Right.
You know, people would come into the study and be changed. And
a friend group.
Did you ever let that roommate of yours know? That sweet mate of yours know that you came to the Lord?
And she still keeps in touch somewhat.
Yeah. We've had so many people on this podcast. I mean, so many that it was a friend or just getting to know somebody who loved the Lord. They didn't really preach to him, but just lived it. So that's great. Well, any parting words you want to say to people out there in cyberland?
Well, I just want to say if you're that I think it's important for especially for Christians, but even just people who are citizens in our community to get involved in volunteer work in some aspect. You know, you don't have to be crazy about animals the way I am, but you can find a church or a community group. There's so many needs in our society, and you can be a part of meeting those needs. And, you know, you people say, I don't have that much time, you know, an hour here and there. You know, if you come help me feed horses for 2 hours once a month, you've met a need. So, yeah. You know, there are just a lot of ways to do it. If you've got writing skills, you can be the voice for people that need someone to be a voice for them, or animals. There are just so many avenues, and everybody has a gift. You know, sometimes it takes a little while to determine what your gift is, but, you know, God had has a place for everybody in his kingdom here and in heaven. And so, you know,
great.
There's a spot for you.
I had a question for Jane.
Okay.
Lawrence and I are extremely different, and most of our religious views are pretty similar.
Oh, no, I know what's coming now.
But
I know what's coming.
I have
coming.
To ask you this. We argued
she's
this.
She's a Presbyterian now, so I don't know what the Presbyterians teach.
Well, she probably has her own opinion. We have argued this, and C.S. Lewis is on my side, but he does not think...
Oh, animals go to
heaven. Go to heaven.
Oh, absolutely.
You think they're going to heaven?
Absolutely.
But
let her give her reasons. Go ahead.
Well... He tells us that he's going to restore creation, and creation began with animals. So those animals are going to be in heaven. Now, you know, I think if it's...
What if they're a mean animal, though?
No, I don't think so.
They'll change their... That'll change their...
You know what? You're going to be cleaning stalls in heaven. You know, everybody's got to do...
No, there's not going to be any manure in heaven.
You don't know that. I do think that... You know, he tells us that we are not going to look the same.
Right.
But we will know each other. Mm-hmm. So I feel that way about animals, too, because I think they're waiting for us there, the ones that we've lost. But they may not look exactly what they look like here. But we'll know who they are. So, yeah, I tell
see, that's
Lewis. Thank you, Jane.
Yeah.
We still argue that point.
I'm not convinced.
I'm not giving up. Well, it says the lion will lay down with the lamb.
Yeah.
They're not doing that right now on earth.
No.
Well.
He doesn't have an answer for that, are
I don't have an answer. I hope they
well,
are.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they know, are. We're going to be recalled with Jesus on a white horse coming to... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there'll be a horse there.
Right, yeah. There you go.
You're going to be cleaning stalls, you wait. Hey, I just don't want to be dusting furniture. I don't mind I don't mind taking the dogs for walks or whatever, but I don't want to be dusting furniture.
I'm anymore. With you on that.
Well, thank you so much for giving up of your time. Fun. This is wonderful.
Let's do it again.
Said it would be easy all the way. He never be all or it's gotta be nothing. Let's go, Brian. Said it would be easy all the way. He never said there wouldn't be a price to pay. He said, gotta count the cost before you start, and follow me with all your heart. Gotta be nothing. It's gotta be all. Gotta be all. It's gotta be nothing. It's gotta be all. Gotta be all. It's gotta be nothing. Oh yeah.
That's our show for tonight. I want to thank our guest Jane Boswell for sharing her life with us. Special thanks to Brian Hoogenboom, and also to my lovely wife, Trish, who took part in this conversation. God bless. Hope you join us next week.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song.